following is a Sunday feast lecture given by His Divine Grace Srila Satsvarup Das Goswami Gurupad on September 18, 1983 in Boston.
I'd like to welcome everyone to our Sunday program on behalf of our spiritual master, founder Acharya of ISKCON movement, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As I hope many of you are aware, we held a very successful Ratha Yatra festival here in Boston. We are holding this festival everywhere in the world, in different major cities. A week before, yesterday, we held it in Washington, D.C. And yesterday was very sweet. The people turned out in good numbers and with a nice attitude. They took literally thousands of plates of full prasadam and chanted with us, watched the drama of Jad Bharat, and took part in the procession also with Lord Jagannath. And what to speak of those also who didn't even come forward to participate directly, their numbers were even greater, who at least saw Lord Jagannath and saw, heard the chanting. And they also, almost all, seemed to be very appreciative or interested in the activity. So we're very gratified. This is one of the functions of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to preach by holding these festivals. Ratha Yatra is an important day in the Vaishnava calendar, and according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the previous Acharya, when a devotee observes these days like Ekadasi and Janmashtami and Ratha Yatra, they're very good for his devotional life. They're called the, he calls them the mothers. They're like a mother of devotion. Now, yesterday, while we observed it as Ratha Yatra, it happened to be another significant date on the Vaishnava calendar, because yesterday, September 17th, was the day of Srila Prabhupada's first arrival in America. That was in September 17th, 1965, and it was in this very city of Boston that he first set foot. I've described all these things in the biographies, the volumes of Prabhupada Lilamrita. Some of us yesterday even went down to the Commonwealth Pier, which was the place where the boat Jalabhuta, an Indian merchant ship, arrived in America after its long journey, over 30 days. Coming. So it makes us, that day makes us reflect on how Srila Prabhupada came and what is his mission. And it's not just a matter of studying his personal life, but it's a historical event, yes, but it's also relevant for our spiritual lives when we think of what he brought. Generally, we think of his contribution as the person who brought Vedic knowledge to the West. This is an astonishing thing. From our point of view, it is even more astonishing and significant than the discovery of this whole part of the globe, which is sometimes credited to Columbus. 1492, that he came And they didn't even know that there was a continent, continents in the Western Hemisphere. You can hardly imagine that, that they didn't even know that this part of the world was there. But he had to discover it. Even that somehow is involved with India, that that the name India, Indians, was given to the people who lived here, because they thought nothing was here, and if they just went around the watery globe, he would come to India, and he wanted to go to India for trade. But around the same time that he was doing that, discovering the external frontier, within India, Lord Chaitanya was appearing and demonstrating his pastimes of discovering the inner self. And that is more important, actually, than discovering the outer world, because the inner world is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. And although we have discovered a new world in the West, the same things are going on here: birth, death, disease, and old age, different sufferings. It is not that by finding the West, any more than by finding the moon by a rocket, we can overcome the basic problems of human life, the basic anxieties and sufferings. But by inner discovery, you can. So Lord Chaitanya was bringing Krishna's message forth by emphasizing the chanting of the holy name in India, as we say, around the same time that Columbus was discovering this world. But that knowledge had been there for many, many centuries before Lord Chaitanya appeared. But he emphasized that people in the age of Kali, the age we're in now, they wouldn't be able to realize God by former methods like austere yoga practices and studies of the Vedas. But if the chanting of the holy name could be distributed widely, then everyone could benefit. And he also predicted that it would not be something kept within the confines of India, because it is not an Indian thing. It is a universal thing. Now, since Lord Chaitanya's time, there have been teachers in disciplic succession, and Srila Prabhupada is in that disciplic succession. It is coming down from Krishna, from Lord Chaitanya. So he brought this Vedic knowledge to the West. Before he came, the only idea of Vedic knowledge was in the form of some of the teachings Hindu Swamis had brought. They also were few and far between. But from them, and by the Westerners, especially the British, going to India and bringing back some idea of the culture, the spiritual culture also, the religion, there was an impression of Indian spirituality that was actually misleading. And that impression is still persisting in the universities and in general public information about the religion. And that is, especially with the first Swamis who came to America, they introduced the idea that the ancient spiritual culture of India teaches an impersonal understanding of God, unlike Christianity, where God is taken as a supreme person. They taught that Vedic culture means to meditate and understand that we are all one, in a sense of Brahman, or impersonal eternal existence. That is called the Advaita philosophy. It is not wrong, but it is only the beginning understanding of the Vedic culture. It is in fact only a bare step above the Buddhist teachings, which teaches that ultimately there is nirvana, or nothingness beyond the material varieties. So this is not the mainstream of religious activity within India. But there, rather, there is so much temple worship, especially temples of Vishnu. Vishnu is the name of God. Therefore, the Krishna followers are called Vaishnavas. And there are different forms of Vishnu, such as Krishna, the original form, and the worshipable Godhead as Narayan, Vishnu forms, and Lord Rama is also Vishnu. Of course, there are many demigods that are worshipped, but they are not the same as Vishnu. They are agents of God. So it is a whole science of God, and it is summed up in the Bhagavad Gita, where spoken by Krishna, where the form of Krishna is described as the original supreme form of God, the most attractive form of God, and this is supported by the great sages and acharyas who are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, like Narada, Devala, Asita, Vyasadeva, who compiled the Vedic scriptures. And this is what the Bhagavad Gita teaches, and the Ramayana and Mahabharata, is that above all the different concepts of God or disciplines stands bhakti or devotion to God, and he is certainly seen as a person. So to say that Indian spirituality is teaching us impersonal meditation is wrong, but they're teaching us a form of devotion to the personal God, which is even more advanced than any Western theism that we had about understanding God, God the Father. And yet we never had that here in the West. We never had bhakti unto Krishna. Therefore we never understood the Bhagavad Gita. I was mentioning to the crowd at the Commons yesterday that in the context of a New England Krishna Conscious Festival, we can note that the New England Transcendentalists were the first Americans to study the Vedas and study the Bhagavad Gita, especially Thoreau and Emerson. So that's a credit, but neither did they understand what is the Bhagavad Gita. They are fascinated by the concepts of Brahman and the cosmic consciousness there, the authority of the scriptures. But unless you hear it from a pure devotee, it is difficult to crack this knowledge, and you can't crack it by just the academic or intellectual approach. It has to be given by one who himself is a devotee of God, a devotee of Krishna. Therefore, even within the Bhagavad Gita, the person who understands the Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna, the direct disciple of Krishna. And Krishna says, I'm teaching you, Arjuna, because bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam he tarutamam. Although the Bhagavad Gita is a mystery, these are great mysteries. What is the soul within the body? How does the soul transmigrate into the next life? How do we develop love of God, individual soul to supreme? These mysteries, Krishna said, I'm passing on to you, Arjuna, because you have the qualification of being my bhakta, my devotion, and my devotee, and my friend. So similarly, you have to hear from someone like Arjuna, a friend of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, he was a pure devotee of Krishna. So, not only did he introduce, did he bring the real philosophy of Vedic knowledge, but he brought it in a non-theoretical way. He brought it in as a missionary, for one thing. And that is also the spirit of the scriptures. That has also been misunderstood because of previous concepts of what the position of the Vedic teacher. Or some people have even said, oh, you Krishna conscious people, in your proselytizing spirit, this is not the real spirit of the Vedas, but their spirit is that if anyone is going to take the spiritual life, it'll just happen. No one has to encourage anybody or try to teach anyone. You'll just realize that you're God, or if you don't realize it, it just won't happen. And that this the The proselytizing spirit comes from the Christians. And so if the Krishna conscious people are doing it now, they must have gotten it from the Christians. But that's not a fact. This spirit, which is a compassionate spirit, to try to help the fallen souls, give them education, give them knowledge, it's there from the creation, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. The different sages, they prayed to the Lord to begin the material creation again, just for the purpose of being compassionate. They glorify Lord Vishnu in some prayers. They say, you have many glories of creation and power, but your greatest glory is your compassion on the living entities. So please show this compassion and appear in this world through the scriptures and through these saintly persons and distribute this knowledge so they can come back to Godhead again. And out of this preaching spirit, Lord Krishna appeared and taught the Bhagavad Gita, where he advised everyone, Sarvadhamma Parityaja Mamekam Saranam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papa Bhyo Moksha Shami Masucha. Give up all activities and surrender to me. He taught different techniques of practicing bhakti yoga. And this missionary spirit, therefore, was always there. And especially, we mentioned Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago. He was very much in this spirit. He said to his followers, the name of Krishna should be known in every town and village of the world. And especially, he said, the people born in Bharata or India, they have a responsibility to distribute this knowledge. Yare deke tai ka Krishna upadesh. Whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. That was his spirit. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, whoever teaches this message to the devotees, he is the dearmost of all servants. There will never be another servant more dear to me, and he will come back to me. So this is not a recent invention. And Srila Prabhupada came in that spirit, very humbly, setting foot in Boston on this day back in 1965, that's 16 years ago, just to carry out the line of teachers, carry out that spirit. And Lord Krishna saved him, the whole world. All the other acharyas, they traveled just in India. Shankara traveled up and down India. Madhva, these are the famous teachers. Ramanuja, Lord Chaitanya, that's big enough scope for them that they went around India. But no one, there was no going out. One reason was not just some lack of transportation. Because people, as we said, for merchant reasons, for commercial reasons, they're traveling all over the world at the same time, Columbus, etc. But there is a feeling that the people are too much fallen. Their habits are so alien to the spiritual life. They're meat eaters. They are called mlechas or yavanas, too far out of the culture. They'll not be able to take it. And some even had a stifled idea that it shouldn't be spread, that it only should be kept to those born in this country. And that idea still persists. That is a cripple-minded idea, but it is not the idea of the scriptures, as we've already described. God is God for everyone. Everyone can come to God. The world was left for some preacher who would come forth. And we, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the 19th century, he visioned that in the future, I think soon, a great personality will come. And he will spread the Dharma of Lord Krishna's teachings all over the world. And we are hankering for that day. He prayed, when will the day come when we'll actually see people of these lands, the Bengalis, and other Indians, they'll be joined by their brothers, Europeans and Americans, and they'll all come together and chant Hare Krishna, Jai Sachinandan. We are hankering for that day when that will be brought about. So Prabhupada brought this Vedic knowledge in a missionary spirit, and he also introduced it in a very practical, thorough way. That is, that you can practice bhakti yoga all the day long. This is such a wonderful thing. 24 hours a day. Even before one has to become a full-time practitioner, he should know that that opportunity is there. Whatever time he does have, he can, and whatever sphere of life he has free for Krishna consciousness, there's a Krishna conscious activity that he can adopt. For example, eating. The eating is fully as spiritual as the praying or the chanting and the meditating. You'll hardly find that in any other discipline. There's a time for prayer, and then when you eat, it's like, maybe we thank God for the food, but it's basically a material thing to take care of your body. But the eating, because you offer your food to God, it's a spiritual act. And the food is taken, understood that this is not different than Krishna. And the chanting also is something that can be done at any time of the day. Similarly, all the normal practices of a daily human life can be infused with bhakti. And Prabhupada very expertly taught us this. He taught us that spirit doesn't mean just something that you can't see, or it's like an angel, it's floating, whereas the material world is the solid objects before us. But he said, because everything is God's energy, everything is spiritual. If you use something in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritualized. The whole world, if you take this spirit of serving Krishna by associating with the devotee of Krishna, all activities can be merged in love of God. Therefore, he was not simply coming with only some scholarly intentions. One of the first places Prabhupada went after Boston, he went to stay with an Indian family in Butler, Pennsylvania. And in the beginning, they thought that he was a gentleman who had written a few books, translations of the scriptures, and that he was coming in a very, what we say, low-profile way. In fact, the woman, wife of the man, said he didn't want to make any waves. That was their understanding, that he was just come to show his books to a few professors and then he would go back, that he was trying to create a little interest in these books. But his intentions were actually revolutionary, although it seemed impossible in the beginning. He wanted to fulfill the prophecy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and spread a movement all over the world, Hare Krishna chanting. So, in commemoration of that day when Prabhupada so humbly and so helplessly set foot in the Boston city, completely unknown, I'd like to read a short section from the biography, Planting the Seed, volume, that tells of Prabhupada's coming at that time. He had a very difficult journey in the boat. He was 70 years old, and he had no money. He wanted to go for many years, but he had no money for such a trip, even by boat. But finally, he found a patron in a woman who ran this steamship company, Scindia Lines, Mrs. Sumati Mulaji. So she gave him a free ticket. It wasn't a Queen Mary type boat. It wasn't a passenger boat. It's a freighter. We've seen this ship since then. It's a battered, rather small boat. And there's one passenger cabin aboard. So they gave him that. And there was storms from the first time out. And he got very sick at first, like seasick. But then worse, he had a heart stroke one night and then another night. And he thought, if it happens a third night, then I probably won't survive. But in the midst of that attack, he had a dream that Krishna appeared to him, encouraging him. And Krishna was in a boat also, and was encouraging Prabhupada, if you come on, you can come to America. So he took heart that Krishna was protecting him, and remembering the orders of his spiritual master to go to the West and preach, he persisted. And after such a long journey, they went through the Suez Canal, below Italy, through the Straits of Gibraltar, across the ocean, that we now can do in 5 hours. Well, from India, it'll take you about 20 hours or so. But the whole thing took him 30 days, with the boat stopping here and there. So then he arrived at this Commonwealth Pier. After a 35-day journey from Calcutta, the Jaladuta reached Boston's Commonwealth Pier at 5:30 a.m. on September 17, 1965. The ship was to stop briefly in Boston before proceeding to New York City. Among the first things Srila Prabhupada saw in America were the letters A and P, printed on a pierfront warehouse. The gray waterfront dawn revealed the ships in the harbor, a conglomeration of lobster stands and drab buildings, and, rising in the distance, the Boston skyline. Prabhupada had to pass through U.S. Immigration and Customs in Boston. His visa allowed him a 3-month stay, and an official stamped it to indicate his expected date of departure. Captain Pandya invited Prabhupada to take a walk into Boston, where the captain intended to do some shopping. They walked across a footbridge into a busy commercial area with old churches, warehouses, office buildings, bars, tawdry bookshops, nightclubs, and restaurants. Prabhupada briefly observed the city, but the most significant thing about his short stay in Boston, aside from the fact that he had now set foot in America, was that at the Commonwealth Pier, he wrote another Bengali poem entitled Markina Bhagavata Dharma, Teaching Krishna Consciousness in America. Some of the verses he wrote on board the ship that day are as follows. So as far as we can surmise, since he wrote it and he dated it and located it as on the Commonwealth Pier, on the boat, that means he was actually on the boat while it was in dock, and in his cabin he wrote this poem. Some of the translated lines, I won't read it all, just a few. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me, but I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva, Krishna. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. You have to appreciate what a contrast it was. Prabhupada was not only coming from India, but within India he was coming from Vrindavan. His residence was a medieval temple, the temple of Radha Damodar, where the great followers of Lord Chaitanya, like Rupa Goswami, used to live and teach and write their books. So that's Vrindavan, is the birthplace of Krishna. Everyone there is a devotee. They all have these japamala and they're chanting Hare Krishna. They greet each other on the street, not by saying hello or good morning, but by saying Jai Radhe, Hare Krishna. So that is the Vrindavan. And for a devotee, a pure devotee of Krishna, you live in a very internal state of always remembering Krishna, because everything in Vrindavan reminds you of Krishna. So to come from there to Boston is such a contrast, you can't imagine it unless we could make such a change. So that's why it may seem a little harsh for a Boston resident that he's saying it's a terrible place. But from the spiritual point of view, we can understand why he is thinking that way, especially that he's thinking, what about my mission? How are these people going to take to the mission? They're so absorbed in something else, and they speak a different language. So how did he have any heart to go on with this? He explains, but I know that your causeless mercy can make everything possible, because you are the most expert mystic.
How will we understand the mellows of devotional service? Oh Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. How will I make them understand this message? I wish that you may deliver them. If you like, by your will, they can be released from the clutches of illusion. I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. So Prabhupada is writing this all alone on the boat. He's not thinking he'll become a famous poet by this, that no one is listening to him. He's writing to his friend, Krishna, to God. This was his only friend. He had no other friend. But God is in the heart. And for the pure devotee, he understands God's presence is always there. But he's feeling very weak and alone and unworthy. And he's talking to God and writing this poem. There's nothing... When we understand the conditions, we can especially appreciate who false about it is not some literary posing. This is a pure devotee in a very awkward situation, coming here and not knowing what to do. In fact, when he got to New York, he told us later that when he walked down the gangplank, he had so little idea of what to do next that he said, I didn't know whether to turn left or right. Not only in terms of the immediate situation, but what to do here in this place. Although the general idea was to introduce Krishna consciousness. But how do you do it when you have only the equivalent of $8 in your pocket and nowhere to stay, and you just know from your first impression that the people are not going to be inclined? Prabhupada would say later, I thought when I tell them the basics of Krishna consciousness, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, they'll say, go home. And he was prepared for that. But at first, he seems, when he arrived in Boston, he was a little overwhelmed with the prospects of it, the first impression of the city and his own. Therefore, he expresses how helpless and useless he feels. What is he actually going to do now that he's here? But Prabhupada, he talks to Krishna that you must be the one, you act through me. And he has faith also that Krishna, in the form of Krishna's teachings, the Srimad Bhagavatam, will be able to actually do this. After all, it may look very formidable, material world, but they are people, and within each person's heart is a spirit. If the people who live there speak a different language than you, the situation is so urgent that somehow you can go to them and make it understood that there's a fire, get out. So the message of the Bhagavatam is urgent for all human beings. If there's some difference in the culture or language, he will be able to get through by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. So he ends this poem. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel gladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance. O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhakti Vedanta, and now if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhakti Vedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, on board the ship, Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA, dated 18th September 1965. The boat stayed for 2 days. Then we've described this. He was now in America. He was in a major American city, rich with billions, populated with millions, and determined to stay the way it was. Prabhupada saw Boston from the viewpoint of a pure devotee of Krishna. He saw the hellish city life, people dedicated to the illusion of material happiness. All his dedication and training moved him to give these people the transcendental knowledge and saving grace of Krishna consciousness. Yet he was feeling weak, lowly, and unable to help them on his own. He was but an insignificant beggar with no money. He had barely survived the two heart attacks at sea. He spoke a different language. He dressed strangely. Yet he had come to tell people to give up meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, and to teach them to worship Lord Krishna, who to them was a mythical Hindu god. What would he be able to accomplish? Helplessly he spoke his heart direct to God. I wish that you may deliver them. I am seeking your benediction that I can convince them. And for convincing them, he would trust in the power of God's holy name and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This transcendental sound would clean away desire for material enjoyment from their hearts and awaken loving service to Krishna. On the streets of Boston, Prabhupada was aware of the power of ignorance and passion that dominated the city, but he had faith in the transcendental process. He was tiny, but God was infinite, and God was Krishna, his dear friend. Now, since that brief stay for a couple of days in Boston, the Krishna consciousness movement has entered. Prabhupada began in New York City, his own preaching, and that whole story is told, how he continued to struggle. And then starting in 1967, devotees came here, and now things are going on, so that we hold nice festivals, we have a nice temple in a fashionable place. But of course, the Maya, or the illusion, has also increased. The skyline that we noticed yesterday from the Commonwealth Pier, that most of the skyline has been added since 1965. Now the whole pier front, they're attempting to make it a very fashionable living place, and so many nice shops. But there's no more attention to spiritual life than there was then. It's just more build-up of the material situation. More energy being poured into the illusion that this world is a place where you can stay permanently or become happy by economic development and by sense gratification. So the struggle continues. We are inspired by Prabhupada's mood that although he was tiny, God is great. And we're happy to note that the Krishna consciousness movement has expanded now all over the world. Hare Krishna has become like a household word in all countries of Europe and in Eastern Europe and the communist countries, although we see them in the press releases how the Kremlin is so upset that they can't stop it. It's spreading all over in all countries, in China, north, south, east, west. And that's all expanding from this coming to the West of Krishna consciousness, which was simply carried by one small-looking person, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So it is a big thing now. It's spreading like anything. And yet, in another sense, compared to the spread of the illusion, it is small in numbers, small in its material position of influence. So we are still in Boston in that way, praying to Krishna as Prabhupada did, but please, how are these people going to take to this Krishna consciousness? The devotees, they go out in the city and chant and distribute books. And sometimes we're stopped. The city makes some new rule. Now you can't go to Boston Commons. Then we have to go through so much legal red tape, and then we go back again. This is constantly going on. And the people, they're not interested in Krishna consciousness. But we have some foothold by Prabhupada's grace, and by his grace we have this inspiration that even when we feel ourselves helpless against the formidable forces of illusion, Krishna will protect us. And that is applicable not only to the preachers, but anyone who wants to take to God consciousness. He's also in a helpless position compared to the strength of his senses. All around us, our friends, and the whole material atmosphere is so conducive and demanding for leading a hedonistic life, not following the code of God. So if one is a little interested in spiritual life, there's also a kind of helpless feeling. I'd like to chant Hare Krishna, but what would my friends think? I'd like to restrict myself from sinful activity, but how could I do that? My own mind and senses are demanding that I take some intoxicants. How could I fight against these forces? But if we speak to Krishna, or associate with Krishna's devotees in a humble mood like Prabhupada, we'll get that strength too. His example is a shining example to meditate upon. Now, these times are gone, in one sense, from our view. Even Prabhupada's whole sojourn on this earth planet, and starting even with his preaching, it's a real rags-to-riches story, how he became so successful and built temples all over the world and had thousands of followers. But now those pastimes are wrapped up. He's gone from the mortal world. So how can we continue, as we are continuing, except by realizing that he is still present, this great teacher, and the teachings. Prabhupada never emphasized himself as a person, that he should be praised or glorified, but the teachings are important. But the teachings should be kept very strictly and carefully as they're given by the pure devotee. So he has given us these books, and anyone who reads the books of Srila Prabhupada, he can be in touch with him very intimately. And he can take up these instructions. As we mentioned, they're very thorough. All the day long, you can be engaged in some kind of Krishna conscious activity. So they're outlined, and they're being practiced also in our temples. You can learn from the devotees how you can do this in your home, how you can cook for Krishna, how you can study, how you can not be overcome by sinful activity and by the inimical forces to spiritual life. So Prabhupada is definitely still present through his literature, through his devotees, through his institution, ISKCON, and through the nice festivals like we perform, and through these Sunday programs also, where we can gather, see Radha Gopi Bhava deities, hear something about Krishna consciousness, take some prasadam, take some spiritual strength home. And by your willingness, we're encouraged to go on and present Prabhupada's teachings. So we're grateful for your reception. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Are there any questions? Yes?
I'm wondering if the American phenomenon of being worried about your appearance and how you present yourself is an aspect of being self-defense gratification and material existence.
Well, yes, because what the main basis for dressing and appearing and what we feel is attractive is some kind of sense gratification. To appear sexually attractive or interesting, or to appear wealthy or beautiful by material estimation, is all some kind of false ego presentation. So that it's just an aspect of material consciousness that everyone has to appear the same way. As you said, you're afraid of appearing a different way. But of course, Krishna consciousness makes no such demand that you have to buck against this tremendous pressure. Although we, as monks, core members of the ISKCON movement, we dress this way to attract attention to Krishna consciousness, so that people will come to us and find out about Krishna. This was going on some wonderful yesterday on a big scale. People were coming up wherever they saw a devotee. Tell me about this religion. What is this? They could identify the person dressed like this and ask him. But we don't, Prabhupada didn't say that to become Krishna conscious you have to dress like this, you have to shave your head. Granted that our fear of looking different is a material thing, still, if one is not prepared to make such a radical change, it's not necessary that he do so. He can keep his position in society and his occupation and his dress. That's not, we don't say that because we're dressed this way we're Krishna conscious, and because someone is dressed in regular Western clothes that they're not Krishna conscious, or that to be Krishna conscious you have to cut your hair. In one sense, it's not important either way. The important thing is the actual practices and the consciousness of the person. So these are more important than dress. But we have to be at least willing, even if we're like the George Harrison, he calls himself a plainclothes devotee, because he's like a policeman, some policeman in plainclothes, but he still does some duty. So he's describing himself like that, though his business and music associates, they may not think he's a devotee because of the dress and hair, but also because the practices are somewhat covered. But still, the real point is, well, is the person a devotee or not? So that there will be times when he can't just make the whole thing covered. He'll be with his friends, and they'll offer him some meat. And if he's a devotee, he'll have to say, no, thank you. If they say why, he can say I'm a vegetarian. And there'll be some time when someone it will be dealing with him confidentially, and they'll see that he's reading Prabhupada's books, that he has beads, that he's chanting, and he'll have to say that I'm a devotee. Unless he wants to be like Peter and deny that he knows anything about Krishna. And the cock will crow. So there's nothing wrong with being a plainclothes devotee, but you have to be a devotee. And if that means that on some occasion somebody finds out that you're a devotee, then at that time you'd have to not be so terrified of that identification that you would even not be a devotee. But to speak of denying that you are, you might just say, I don't want the hassle of people thinking I am, so I won't be. Because somebody might find out that I am and not like it. We have to have some courage about such an important thing in life. So that courage can be quiet. It doesn't mean that you have to go up and down the street. But there are always moments of truth where we have to defend our spiritual life and defend our practices, at least, even if you're not an overt preacher, you have to make some vows and stick by them. So that would be more important than certain outward appearances. Because some forms of meditation, they say that we should get rid of all ego. But no, ego means self. Understanding of self, that I am something. I remember once I went to Srila Prabhupada and I said to him that I feel that I'm too proud of the different activities that we do on your behalf in Boston, and I try to take credit for things. So he listened and he said, that feeling that you have that I am something, he said, that's not wrong. You are something. But the pride is wrong when you think that I am something great. So I am something is all right, but who are you? Then the right answer is, I'm a servant of God. So that's the proper ego. Ego means I am somebody. I have some self. But that is to be the servant of God. So false ego is if you think yourself as something else. You think of yourself as, I am an American. I am a woman. I am a professor. I am real smart. Or I am something else. All these are false because that's not what you are. You're a servant of God. So we don't advocate getting rid of all ego, and then you're nothing. You're something. You're the eternal servant of God. Therefore, the Sanskrit word is ahankar, a false ego. And from that false ego, your whole entrapment in the material world comes out. Therefore, you get a body. Therefore, you identify with a country. You identify with a family, with a house. It's all based on false ego. And when you have real ego, that I am not American, I'm not woman. These are coverings to myself. I'm actually a servant of a servant of a servant of God. Then you have the real ego.
In the common fear, there are several fears. Which is the exact fear? Prabhupada language.
Well, as we saw it yesterday, there's one big pier building that goes out into the water, and big boats go on either side. There are many piers, but I think there's only one called Commonwealth Pier. But even that has two sides. Right now there's a Navy ship on one side and a little boat that goes to Provincetown on the other. I don't know which side it was on. We went there yesterday, tried to go on the pier, and they chased us off. But we got the feeling. Actually, Prabhupada himself went there. Also, he was interested. He visited Boston in 1968 and again in 1969. And sometimes he would say, I want to go to that Commonwealth Pier, see the place where I came. So we went down once in an old bus and walked back and forth on the cobblestone road in front of that Commonwealth Pier. And he recalled different things, but mostly he was just preaching. There's a steel bridge there also. And he walked under that bridge and he saw a sign that said, unalloyed steel. And he said, they have unalloyed steel, we have unalloyed devotion to God. So not only that it's memorable that he first went there, but on his subsequent visits to Boston, he also made it a kind of a pilgrimage. He made the whole city a pilgrimage. And now we try to continue this work. Yes?
What is a personality?
What is a personality? It's a personality is another way of saying a person or an individual. We use the word loosely sometimes to speak of a certain TV personality. Or someone has a gregarious personality, we're describing the kind of person they are, the kind of individual they are. But everyone is a personality. I may not have as much charismatic personality, but I have my own kind of personality, and so do you, and so does a rose, and so does a dog. So it means person, individual. And ultimately, in spiritual terms of spiritual knowledge, person means the soul, the jiva. I may be a talkative person, a quiet person, but that's also just, that's my karma, that's a material expression. Within, I'm actually a pure soul, and I have a certain relationship to God, which I'm trying to realize. And that's, everyone has the same qualitative personality, although even that is expressed differently because Krishna has different kinds of devotees. Someone likes to serve Krishna as a gopi, someone serves Krishna as a parent, someone serves Krishna as a cow. So even there's different person or personality relationships with God. Now what we see as personality is just different forms of material energy. comes and goes. Where are the personalities of 50 years ago? They're gone. But the soul goes on and takes another body. Therefore, when we take the spiritual life, we have to develop our personality fresh, trying to find out who we are in relation to Krishna. All right, then, I think we can go on with our program to just distribute Krishna prasadam and converse. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.